And welcome to our IFR Refresher podcast. What's in your panel? IFR Refresher, a monthly review of IFR rules and procedures designed to hone your skills and reinforce your knowledge. Learn more or subscribe at ifr-refresher.com. Editor Meredith Saney interviewed pilots who were camping with their airplanes at AirVenture this year to find out what level of equipment people are using to fly IFR and how it affects their decision-making when dealing with weather. Here's what two ordinary GA pilots had to say. First, Dave Hill of Des Moines, Iowa, on flying IFR in his 1971 Piper Cherokee.
Yes, I don't even have an autopilot, so single-pilot IFR in this thing, especially with the four fuel tanks. It's a lot of work, and you work on unusual attitude regularly. You just drop your eye for a minute to look at your chart, and next thing you know, you're off course. Now, just a wing leveler would be so nice. If I could get one of those, but again, you're probably still looking at, $5,000 or $6,000-$7,000.
So how does that affect the types of missions that you're willing to fly or that you have flown over the years?
You know, it really doesn't. I probably, the lowest minimum I ever shot was maybe 500 or 600. I would never go if they were at reporting 200. I know someday that may happen where it evolves. And I lived a lot of years in North Dakota. I'm in Iowa now. So, your missions there, you got to be careful about ice. And a lot of times this Midwest stuff, it's 3,000 feet thick, and if you can get up through it on top. And I've gone out a couple times, and when the ceilings are pretty high, and practice approaches to see what kind of accumulation I get. I mean, I never let anything really get on it, but just to see what happens.
Right.
And so, if I had, guys like Richard Collins, you read him, and he says, "Well, nobody should fly IFR without an autopilot." And I think that's pretty extreme. In a perfect world, great. It'd be nice to have one coupled to a GPS and sit back there and monitor it on the way down. But the reality is I like to fly. I like the challenge of IFR flying. Mm-hmm. And I think of myself as a cautious pilot, so if there's thunderstorms or ice, I just don't go. So for me, I don't think having additional equipment would change my threshold for risk. I don't think it would make me more willing to go.
But the autopilot certainly would help reduce the workload.
Yes, it would, especially with a plane like this where with the four fuel tanks, I mean, everything. 20, 30 minutes, you get a wing heavy.
What's the longest leg that you typically plan for, time-wise?
I'll go up to 4.5 hours. I met my wife here at Oshkosh in 99.
Oh, really?
And she lived in Madison, and I lived in Fargo. So it was, depending on winds, around 4 hours or
sure.
4.5. If I had a choice or when she's with me, which she will be tonight, 2.5 hours is nice. Unless it's IFR, and then you hate to go shoot an approach if you don't have to.
Next, we spoke with Gil Velez of New Jersey on flying IFR in his 2002 Cessna 172S.
The typical mission is a 2.5 hour or less flight. And if you know Westchester, except in the summer, and frequently in the summer too, it's always fog down or in mist or haze. In the summer, it's haze. In the winter, it's mist most of the time. So it's frequently IFR, but it's just to get out. Once you get out, you quickly break out. So if I didn't have my IFR, I would be stuck down. But with my IFR training, it's just getting out. Take off, climb, and get out. So I have longer missions, but that's the average mission. Mm-hmm. Coming here, for example, if I didn't have my IFR rating, I would not have been able to make it here because the day and the day before I had planned to come here, and the day after, which is I always have a 3-day windows just in case. The day I planned, the day before, and the day after, just in case I have to leave early, I have to wait a day. It was IFR almost all the way from White Plains. 400 feet above the ground, it was already IFR. All the way in and out of cloud until we got to Toledo, Ohio. So,
yeah.
Two stops. So that's pretty much the basic mission. And in terms of approaches, like most pilots, I suppose, we prefer the ILS. Take us down, straight down to a point. So I prefer my ILS, although I, you know, shoot the GPS every time I have to. But if I have I have to choose between an ILS and a GPS, I would do the ILS. I don't have WAS. That's my next improvement here, is to switch from that, substitute these two instruments by a Garmin 530, or you know, with WAS, so I can shoot WAS down to, you know, like an ILS GPS. That's basically it.
So to change out those avionics, you're also going to have to do a lot of rewiring for the autopilot, correct?
Yeah, because all of this is coupled to the autopilot.
Yeah. How do you justify that kind of upgrade in this airplane? Have you considered just selling the airplane and getting a different airplane?
I have, but the market these days for selling aircraft is not that great. You know, if you look at the, you know, all the trade a plane, all these magazines and online, airplane selling services, you see there are a lot of 182s there, and they've been there for a while. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to sell a plane this day because nobody's buying planes.
Mm-hmm.
And this plane, you know, this plane pretty much takes me everywhere I want to go, slow, but everywhere I want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I even will reach 60% of what this plane's worth to me if I sell it now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's you're going to get a hit. The only way you can do that is if somebody is really, really stranded for cash.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get them swap planes. And if somebody wants to dump a more expensive plane that is costing them more money,
mm-hmm.
and say, okay, I'll take your account here. You take this one. You pay less for this. Right. I'll pay more for that. And maybe a little bit of cash. So a deal like that. And those are very scarce, you know, to come.
Yeah. One more question. So this same airplane, same speed, otherwise platform, if you had the G1000, just let's say money notwithstanding, you had a G1000 in here right now, how do you think that would affect your decision-making, your no-go decision-making as an IFR pilot? Would it?
Well, I don't think it would, because I've been flying for 40 years, and this is what I know.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I know, these gauges. I know these gauges like, you know, like my hand wrist. My wristband watch. So I trust these gauges. I have flown the G1000, and I would probably, it'll take me some time to really become familiar and confident enough with that system for me to make decisions about a trip that I won't think twice in my plane.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know, you know, and I know what to watch, and I know when these things start to look funny, what you know, it's like an instinct almost. It's almost an instinct. My scan in this direction, like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the G1000 is very fancy. It's very good, but I'm not familiar with it. It's like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know that instrument as well as I don't know this instrument. I go anywhere with this. I could. You tell me here, okay, let's go to Colombia. And I know, well, it's going to take us a few days, but I'll get you there. I'll get you there here. The G1000, it'll take me some months to get familiar with that.
I understand.
So that's the difference, you know. I would go anywhere with this. With the G1000, I wouldn't take any risks, you know, any even calculated risks until I'm more familiar with that system.
Sure. What do you perceive that there are any additional benefits to be gained by upgrading versus, you know, is there anything, once you figured it out,
or starting training with that?
No, I'm saying right now, let's say that you decided you were willing to invest the time to learn the new system.
Mm-hmm.
Once you were familiar, do you perceive there being any advantage to you as an IFR pilot to having that versus just keeping this?
I think so, yeah.
What are some of the advantages you perceive?
Well, the one thing is that you have a lot of functionality in one screen. Which is good and bad. If that one goes bad, then everything goes. And you can switch to the other one for emergency. But that's one thing. All the information is concentrated in one place. It's all electronic, digital information, which is, you know, relatively easy to handle.
Yeah.
And to display, as opposed to, you know, making interpretation as to where this needle is as opposed to that one.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, if I had the time and the money to invest in a system like that, then I know I'm going to have to spend some time learning the system. And as I did with this one, to, you know, gradually take more risk, or let's say, you know, push the boundary a little bit more, a little bit more, as I feel comfortable with the system.
I mean, having the panel mounted 496 does give you additional situational awareness with the old panel.
Big time.
So
this trip, again, that I took would not have been possible without that GPS 496 because of the weather.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could easily add the weather. You know, it's just a car. It's 8,000, just a car, but we're talking about 8,000 plus another probably 2,000 in labor. So we're talking about 10,000 to add weather capability to this system here, and I would have weather display here in the MFD.
Mm-hmm.
But for $2,500, I get it here, plus I get music, an extra GPS, and believe me, this is a 172. I'm not gonna penetrate anything more than, you know, light yellow with this. So, but that tells me what the red is, where the yellow is, and help me kind of go one way or the other, as opposed to, you know, I see ahead of time. So I know that if I make a 10 degree deviation now, I'm going to avoid that cell that is 30, 40 miles down.
You can plan ahead.
Ahead,
a lot
exactly.
More.
As opposed to flying, and then all of a sudden, whoa.
Right.
You know, I need to get around here.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big help. I mean, I don't like that ad for that car. I don't leave home without that. You know, I trust that instrument. You know, and I use it. You know, I use it for my advantage.
Our thanks to Dave and Gil for speaking with us at Oshkosh this year. For more interviews and photos from the Campground at AirVenture, check out the September 2008 issue of IFR Refresher. If you don't have a subscription, you can check it out online at www.ifr-refresher.com.